Good morning. Welcome to iDisney News. I'm your host, Hugh LaFollette. On the show this week, I'm talking to Stephen Bezruchka, a ER physician and a professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Washington, and our topic will be how inequality damages health. Stephen, glad to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
All right, let's sort of jump right into this. When you think about the United States, we spend an enormous amount of money on health care. We have a great deal of interest in health care. There are always television shows, specials on health care, bits in the news. It would seem that we would be the healthiest people in the world. But according to some studies which you found, that's not true. Wonder if you could briefly explain what the studies show and just give a summary of your explanation of that, and then we'll look at the explanation in more detail during the remainder of the show.
Okay. I think we would best begin by defining health. And we have to think of health of a population, health of a country. And I think a reasonably well-accepted definition is life expectancy. That is, at today's mortality rates, born today, how long can you expect to live? And since we record all births and deaths in rich countries, we have the data to make those calculations. And so if we calculate life expectancy for all the countries, and the United Nations and World Health Organization and other agencies do that, and they publish tables of this every year, if you take those tables and you just rank countries by life expectancy in what I call the Health Olympics, you find it surprising where America stands. Most people would think America is at least in the top five countries. Most people would, almost everybody would say, well, we're in the top 10. But in fact, we're around 25th. And the surprising thing is that we weren't always that bad. That is, if we go back to 1960, we were 13th. And we've been sort of in a free fall ever since. And at the same time, you know, if you read the newspaper every year, there's usually a notice from the CDC, that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the federal body that looks at this, and they say health improves over last year in America. And they, of course, are correct. That is, the mortality rates have declined a little bit each succeeding year, but compared to other countries, it hasn't declined as much. And so even though we've done a little better than the year before, relative to other countries, we've gone down. And so I sort of say, do we give the gold medal to the person who wins the Olympics or the person who betters last year's time in the race? And I think we should compare ourselves with the gold medalist in the Olympics and not how we did last year.
All right, what you say we're about 25th. Could you give some details? What are some of the countries that are ahead of us? Are they all developed countries? Are they all in the West? And maybe a little bit about just how different those figures are.
Okay. Well, if we consider the gap between us and the leader, it's 3.5 years of life expectancy between the United States and Japan. Japan has a life expectancy of around 80 years, and ours is about 76.5. Now, that we may think, do we care whether we live another 3.5 years? Is it really that important? But if you look at how you calculate a life table, and you ask, well, what could America do to tie with Japan for the gold medal? One thing we could do is eliminate all deaths from heart disease. Heart disease is is our number one killer. It kills almost half the population, about 40%. If we eliminated heart disease as a cause of death in America and kept all the other disease death rates the same, we would gain 3.5 years and tie with Japan. Now, nobody in America is even considering that we could ever do something like eliminate all deaths from heart disease. I think of it as a substantial gap that we're so far behind the leaders. Now, every other rich country is ahead of us with one exception, and that exception is Denmark. And to quote Hamlet, there is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and I could go into that, but I won't. But there are a number of poor countries ahead of us. I think very interestingly, Israel is 14th. And I think Israel is important because of all the countries in the world, we give the most amount of foreign aid to Israel, and yet it's much healthier than we are. The number one country is Japan. And the interesting thing about Japan is back in 1960, when we were 23rd, when we were 13th, Japan was 23rd. And by 1977, in the Health Olympic race, Japan had overtaken all the other countries and now has a very substantial lead over America. And we can learn an awful lot from looking at this at this ranking of countries by life expectancy in this way, because it makes us question so many of our very closely held beliefs. When I talk about this and I say, well, who's been to Japan? And I say, what do you know about health behaviors in Japan? And somebody will say, well, they eat a lot of fish, and they live in crowded, tiny apartments, and they smoke a lot. And in fact, of all the rich countries, no other country has as many smokers per capita as Japan. So think of it. Japan is the healthiest country in the world, and also is the country with the greatest amount of smokers in the world, of all the rich countries per capita. Now, I have to be careful here, because I'm implying that smoking is good for you. It's not good for you in America. But it appears that if you're born in Japan and you're a smoker, you're not going to be as unhealthy compared to other non-smoking Japanese as you would be in America. And that suggests that there's something about the socioeconomic environment that allows you to get away with a very unhealthy habit in Japan. And then that leads you into that question, well, what is it about Japan that allows you to not look at these bad behaviors? Clearly, smoking is bad for your health. There's no question about that. But it's not as bad as some other things that we have operating in America. So if I can go on.
Sure. Actually, could I just ask one question, because it'll help clarify this issue in smoking
sure.
a bit. I take it, too, that it when you say that a smoker in Japan is not as bad as a smoker in the United States, that a smoker in Japan, in fact, will live longer. The average smoker in Japan will live longer than the average smoker in the United States.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So one then asks the question, what is it about a population that is different from just being a collection of individuals? And I sort of say, well, you know, what are you and I are just a collection of cells. You know, we're all made up of cells. That's all we are, cells in water. If we ask a cell biologist what a cell needs to be healthy, what's the most important thing? They will say, well, we need oxygen and glucose. You know, glucose is the stuff that's found in foods. Without that, you know, your cell's going to die. Well, we're just a collection of cells, so let's just assume that's all we need is oxygen and glucose, and let's fill ourselves full of food and oxygen. Well, that won't make us healthy. You know, our increasing rates of obesity certainly testify to that as we try to fill ourselves with food. But if we consider the community of cells, which comprises an individual human being, we have to think of not just the cell isolated, but the cell in context. Then the community of cells responds to different things to make it healthy. The usual do's and don'ts that we all know about: don't smoke, exercise, eat well, those kinds of things. Could the same thing be true for a population? In other words, a population is made up of a bunch of people. America is just a bunch of individuals in this country. So to make the population healthy, do we just take all the usual do's and don'ts and say if the population does that, then it will be healthy? And America's example of being 25th in the Health Olympics and Japan being first while smoking so much suggests that there may be factors that affect the health of a population that don't have the same individual counterparts, such as the distinction between the individual and the cell. And so it makes us want to look at, well, what is it that can impact a population to make it healthy? And this is very important because, you know, if we do what, as individuals, what is necessary to make us healthy, we don't have to worry about the health of our individual cells. We don't have to worry whether that cell's getting enough oxygen or getting enough glucose and those sorts of things. We make ourselves healthy as an individual, and our cells are healthy as a byproduct. Could the same thing be true for a population? That is, if we make the population healthy, then what you and I do as individuals to produce our health may not be so important. And, you know, Japan's smoking gun suggests that there may be such factors. Well, what could those factors be? Studies have emerged in the last 20 years that have really helped us understand that the factor that is most associated with the health of a population is some measure of the hierarchy in that population, some measure of the relative status of individuals, and in rich countries, in monetized economies, it is the income, the relative income, how much money you make, that seems to indicate where you stand in the hierarchy because in most rich countries today, to some extent or another, your sense of self-esteem and your sense of self-worth seems to be determined by your economic status, how much money you make. And those studies now, we have over 20 such studies. They're extremely consistent. They help explain so much of the relationship between the Health Olympics and hierarchy that I think anybody who looks critically at the data would have to say that this is the most important thing we know about that determines the health of a population.
Okay, so when you say hierarchy makes a difference, then clearly you're saying that Japan, having a much longer lifespan, has much less hierarchy than the United States.
That's correct.
And would it be true of all the countries, or certainly of the majority of the countries above us, that they would also be?
We have the biggest gap between the rich and the poor of any rich country. There are a few poor ones that have a bigger gap, but they're below us in the health level.
Okay. Now, when you talk about the gap between the rich and the poor, do you have a figure that you can give us and compare it, say, to Japan?
Okay, one figure is there are many different measures of hierarchy, and one that many people might relate to very easily is in Japan, a CEO, the boss of a corporation, makes about 15 times what an entry-level worker in that corporation makes. In America, it's 475 times. That's a huge gap. And, it's a huge difference. And that is reflective throughout all of society. Now, it's interesting that even 10 years ago, a CEO in America made only 40 times what an entry-level worker made. And so in the last 10 years, we've seen an increase of an order of magnitude in that gap. And that is part of what's responsible for our health decline.
Has there been a decline in the gap in Japan during the same period? Has the gap gotten smaller?
No, it hasn't gotten smaller. It hasn't. Unfortunately, the world right now is in such economic turmoil that the Japanese, with a CEO to worker pay ratio of around 15, the CEOs over there are looking at the obscene salaries that CEOs here get and say, "Hey, why can't we get those kinds of salaries?" And so things are starting to change. I think during the last 20 years, during which time Japan has had the gold medal in the Health Olympics, it hasn't changed much.
Okay, it's just that it hasn't changed much, whereas the United States and other countries, the gap has gotten larger.
Especially in the United States. I mean, there is no other country where I have data that has a gap between the CEO and the entry-level worker of more than 50-1, except the United States.
Okay. Are there any other measures? I mean, you're right, that's one that people have probably heard of, but are there other measures of inequality that that we can put our fingers on?
Sure. A common one is what percentage of the total family income goes to the bottom half of families is one such measure. Another one would be what is the ratio of the people in the top 10% to the bottom 90%, or the top 10% to the bottom 10%. Economists actually have a huge number of these measures, and in the development of the research on this, initially there were people saying, well, it depends on what income inequality measure you use, that the data will reflect different things, and there were a group of people at Harvard that looked at the income gap among states in America and their mortality rates and used essentially every different measure that the economists used, and they showed virtually the same relationship.
Okay, so the phenomenon you're talking about is not just between countries, it's also within countries.
Absolutely. If you live in states that have a big gap between the rich and the poor, such as Louisiana and Mississippi, you have almost a 50% greater mortality than states that have a small gap between the rich and the poor, such as Utah, North Dakota, New Hampshire. And you might say, well, the Louisiana and Mississippi are much poorer, more people smoke there, those kinds of measures. But you can statistically control for all of those factors, and you find it doesn't change the relationship. We also have data by cities. And if you take the city data, if you take 282 largest cities in America and you group them into the poorest cities, the below-the-middle cities, above-the-middle cities, and the richest cities, you find that the more that within each grouping, within each quartile, that there's, again, the same relationship between income distribution, that rich cities with a big gap between the rich and the poor will have more higher mortality, worse health, than rich cities with a small gap between the rich and the poor. Same thing is true for poor cities. And the startling fact emerges that poor cities with a small gap between the rich and the poor have almost as good health as rich cities with a small gap between the rich and the poor, really suggesting that it is the gap between the rich and the poor that determines the health of populations.
All right. Now, I can imagine someone saying, though, you know, that surely there must be some other factor, and surely that other factor is health care, that what's going on in the wealthier cities, in the cities with the largest gap between rich and poor, the problem is that more and more people are not in the bottom, are not getting adequate health care. Whereas in a city with some sort of equality, everyone's getting health care, and health care is what makes the difference.
Right.
What do you say to that?
If you look at it, again, from an epidemiologic perspective, there are no data, there are no studies suggesting that if you have a substantial population and you put health care into the equation, so to speak, into the pot, that you get health output. There are no studies suggesting that. Elementary logic would suggest that America, which spends almost half of all the money spent worldwide on healthcare, 42% to be exact, that's how much of the world's health budget we spend here in America, and yet we're 25th in the Health Olympics. So if we were, you know, here we have such a sophisticated healthcare system, you would think it is buying us something. It's certainly buying us something, but it doesn't appear to be population health.
All right, I'm wondering in the second half of the show if you can explain the rationale. I mean, you've got statistics which show that inequality is the largest, overwhelmingly the largest determinant of a population's health, not necessarily any particular individual's, but of a population's health. Why does inequality make such a difference? What is it about inequality? What is it about hierarchy that makes this difference?
We can look upon this in many different ways. If you think about an egalitarian society, you know, one in which everybody is pretty well equal, where a society with a small gap between the rich and the poor, then we are all sort of equal. We're friends. We support one another. We cooperate. It's a sociable relationship. The sense of community prevails. And I think that that's this concept that we now talk of as social capital. There's a lot of social capital in egalitarian societies. If you think of a hierarchical society, then what are the prevailing relationships in there? There are those of power and dominance and coercion by those on top, resignation, resentment, and submission by those on the bottom. Now, if you just contrast those terms, you know, one sounds warm and fuzzy and friendly and healthy, the other by nature doesn't. Now, how does that translate into pathophysiology or biology? You know, one is sort of a touchy-feely concept. It turns out that if you study other primates and you begin to look at hierarchical relationships in baboons, for example, I was just down at Stanford University and I talked with Robert Sapolsky, who's one of the leading researchers on baboons in this regard. And he finds that the high-ranking males have good health, and they have much less chronic stress than the low-ranking males, which have poor health. And the low-ranking males are always sort of on the lookout because somebody may come and beat up on them or grab their food or take their partner away or something like that. Whereas the high-ranking male, they sort of have the best of everything. And this translates into physiologic changes, especially involving the chronic stress hormone cortisol. And so it turns out that the high-ranking animals have lower levels of cortisol, and they have a very different acute stress response than the low-ranking animals, which have higher basal cortisol levels, and they can't mount an acute stress response to get away in terms of danger, and they're more likely to be injured. Well, we have a similar concept in human populations, and that's called the allostatic load, and that relates to the ways in which your body adjusts to dealing with the chronic stress in society. It raises your blood pressure, you get higher glucose levels because you have more insulin resistance, your platelets become more sticky and they're more likely to clot and lead to heart attacks. And so we can actually tease out a variety of pathophysiologic mechanisms in which hierarchy actually leads to more of the diseases that kill us.
Okay, so it still are the diseases that kill us. I mean that's one thing I suppose you'd say.
Yeah, we all die from the usual diseases.
It's that what causes the diseases and what makes us more vulnerable to them, and it's the stress under which we go, and that stress is determined largely by our position on the hierarchy.
Right. I mean, it sort of depends on proximate causes. That is, I work in emergency medicine, and I see somebody who comes in with a heart attack, and so I think about regulating their blood pressure and trying to do something to open up the vessel. And that is trying to intervene long after all these other processes have worked. And that's why medical care can't do very much. It's sort of like the ambulance waiting at the bottom of a cliff to pick up the victims that are trying to leap across. Just by its very nature, it can't do much. And it's not much is going to happen when we understand the human genome and can think of all the so-called genetic factors that impact this. It is really, you have to go back upstream and look at the real determinants that cause these proximate risk factors. And those are the structure of society.
Well, now, would it be fair to say that what you're doing is urging preventative medicine, but in a very different sense than we thought about it before? When we thought about preventative medicine in the past, it meant, watch your diet, get exercise, and so on. And it's not necessarily that you're saying those are not important.
I exercise every day.
But you're saying that there's a deeper and more important form of prevention that we ought to be worried about. And that's
actually,
the equality
in
our society.
I don't think prevention is a good word.
Oh, okay.
I think medicine is a good word. We need structural medicine. We need medicine to change the structure of society so that people don't have to beat the odds of poor health and become healthy, but that the odds are minimized for everyone, so everyone essentially is healthy, and we don't have to worry about individual behavior such as Japan's smoking gun would suggest. So, yes, we have to think of how to intervene in a society. And it can't be on an individual basis. It has to be on a population basis. And you have to sort of have a scorecard. That is, it's kind of pointless to go to a game and not watch the scorecard if the goal is to win. So we need a new scorecard than what we have right now. Andrew Grove said you get what you measure. And what do we measure in America? Well, every minute we measure the Dow Jones and the NASDAQ, and every 15 seconds the Chicago Futures Index. So we get those things. And what do those things represent? Well, they represent wealth creation, and wealth by definition is money at the top. We ought to have a new scorecard, and I would suggest that the scorecard should be our standing in the Health Olympics. That perhaps every year the president in the State of the Union address should say, well, this year we sank from 20th to 24th in the Health Olympics. Next year you'll say, well, last year we were 24th, this year we're 25th. If we just reported that, for example, I found that people are just absolutely dumbfounded that we do so badly. And, they try to come up with some explanations for it, and none of them are very significant.
What specifically should we do as a culture? I mean, okay, if we recognize that it's a problem, we recognize that we ought to do better in the healthcare Olympics, what should we do or try to do to change that?
Well, if we recognize that it's who gets what share of the pie, then in a sense the structural medicine might include looking at the tax structure of society. Right now there are tax cuts being proposed, and those tax cuts would increase the hierarchy. We want to do away with the estate tax. That would increase the hierarchy. We are planning to do more military spending. What is military spending? It's taking taxpayer dollars and concentrating them in a few hands. We should have social spending. We should have more spending on education, on daycare, on public transportation. This is redistributive downward. All of those, the ways in which we structure our economy should be set up so that everybody shares in this incredibly rich and prosperous country instead of just a few.
Are there specific things that we could try to do to achieve that? I mean, just trying to decide, let that help shape who we vote for, to try to encourage our representatives to be thinking about our standing in the Health Olympics? Are those the sorts of things you have in mind?
Absolutely. I mean, we need a new scorecard. I mean, we should every month, for example, if you live in a city, we should look at our health compared to other cities and say, well, you know, we're not doing, you know, how have we changed over the previous month or the previous year or whatever, however we collect our data. We should compare ourselves with others and try to understand what factors are bringing us down, so to speak, and then start doing something about that. But it is gonna come, if we are gonna move up in the Health Olympics, it's gonna be either by exporting our current economic system so that others come down relative to us, or having a system in which we and everybody else moves up. And I think the goal should be for every country in the world to tie for the gold in the Health Olympics. I mean, that's the only humanitarian goal that makes sense in the world today.
Okay, now you're not let me just make sure that I'm clear about this. You're not advocating that because this is the most dominant factor, that what we all ought to do now is go out and start smoking, drink a bit more, put on 40 pounds, don't do any exercise.
No, we might be able to do that once we get the structure right.
Okay.
But that's going to take generations.
We used the language a moment ago of fighting against the odds. And those, I take it, the changes in behaviors are ways of trying to resist the odds. What you're trying to do is to change the odds.
Yes.
Okay.
And if, you know, it's like Japan's smoking gun. You change the odds and then the difference between the people in the high, you know, you have a smaller hierarchy, and so everybody enjoys better health rather than just the select few who beat the odds.
Okay. We've got about 45 seconds here. Do you want to give a quick summary of a point you want to make, maybe references you want to send the listener to if they want to find out more about this? Really anything you'd like to do, any point you'd like to leave with the listener?
Okay. Well, first of all, on your website is a graph of the Health Olympic rankings, the top 30 countries. And so people might want to look at that and just see about what the standing is. And also on your website, you have a link to a website we have at the University of Washington that is basically a bibliography of the scientific studies that underlie the kinds of statements that I've made. And so listeners who want to delve further into this, I can get at those issues. There isn't a lot of material in the popular press on this, so most of it, unfortunately, is only in the scientific literature. But I think to summarize, you know, populations are not just collections of individuals, that they respond to different factors than we can apply to individuals, that hierarchy appears to be the most important factor, and if we want to improve America's health, we're going to have to change the hierarchy so everybody shares in the wealth of this country.
Okay, well, thank you very much for appearing on the show today.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking today with Stephen Bezruchka, emergency room doctor and professor at the School of Public Health, University of Washington. This is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good day.